That last step is just the last step here. Think about this. Think about our God. Think about this phrase that he declares to be his name, I am. And I want us to go through our slides. We're going to make a comparison, but I want us to give a little bit of history behind Moses in chapter 3 of the book of Exodus, being at that burning bush, that bush that's on fire but is never burned and never consumed. Before we get there, let's think about this. The Israelites lived in Egypt for 430 years. God told Abraham they will be there for 430 years. And they were there for 430 years. Something that we need to get correct in our minds is they were not slaves for 430 years. They lived in Egypt 430 years. Only a part of that time were they slaves. How long a time? Well, I'm not sure. But we might have some hints given to us. Moses was 40 when he fled from Egypt. That was when he saw an Egyptian beating one of the Israelites and killed the Egyptian, and then broke up a fight between two Israelites, and one of them let him know that what he had done was not in secret, and the word got out of what had occurred, and Moses flees for his life, and when he flees for his life, he is 40 years old. Moses was 80 when he came back to Egypt after he saw the burning bush. And after he saw that burning bush and returned, his brother Aaron was sent out to meet him. And his brother Aaron was coming out to meet him and went back with him. And his brother Aaron was 3 years older than him. Now put some things together and think about it. When Joseph was sold into Egyptian slavery, he was most likely 17 years old. The chapter that begins with him telling on two of his brothers, bringing a bad report to his father about two of his brothers, it is at the start of that that we are told that Joseph was 17 years old. It's very likely that the events of his brothers selling him occurred the same year. If not in the same year, very soon. But we can assume, because a lot can happen in a year, and that within that same year, Joseph is sold into slavery, or sold to those travelers who are going to Egypt, and he would have been 17 years old at that time. When he stands in front of Pharaoh, and Pharaoh makes him second in all of the land of Egypt as ruler, he is 30 years old. So he had been in the land of Egypt, if he went when he was 17, he had been there for 13 years. And those 13 years would have been the time he would have spent in Potiphar's house and the time he would have spent in prison. And we have no idea how to divide that time. It is in the second year of the 7 years of famine when his brothers come and he makes himself known to his brothers. At that time, he would have been either 39 or 40 years old. He lived to be 110. When he was 110 years old, he left instruction for the children of Israel and what they were to do with his body when God came and brought them out of the land of Egypt. So we already have almost 100 years passing by with Joseph's death and being known. At some point, there is a change of dynasty. At some point, there is a new type of Pharaoh that arises. And this new type of Pharaoh has no regard whatsoever to Joseph. When did this occur? We don't know. But It was after the children of Israel, who were 70 people when they came, when Joseph was 40 years old. It was those 70 people that had now become a nation of people. And they had reproduced so successfully and so frequently that the land was covered with them. And when this new dynasty came in, the man who was the new Pharaoh said, there are so many Israelites that if a nation attacked us, they could join sides with them and they would overwhelm us. There's more of them than us. And so they decided that they needed to do something to stop the growth of the children of Israel. So they made them slaves. When they made them slaves, he started the process of infanticide. They didn't call it abortion. They called it what it was. They called it infanticide. So the midwives who delivered the children, if it was a male, were to kill them. But there were two midwives. There may have been other midwives, but there were two that God focuses on. And those two midwives refused to kill the babies. They let them live. And when Pharaoh complained about it, they told Pharaoh, the Hebrew wives, those women aren't like Egyptian women. They are so strong and they deliver the baby before we can ever get there. When we get there, the baby's already there. So a policy change took place. And the policy change was, from this point on, every male that is born to the Israelites, to the Hebrews, is to be thrown into the Nile and to be killed. Moses was born. And they hid him in the Nile in a basket. And he was found by Pharaoh's daughter. We know that story. The questions that we don't have answered for us, what happened to his brother who was 3 years older than him? Because the policy to put the children in the Nile to kill them was enacted at about the time of Moses' birth. And Moses was born during that time, and his mother protected him from it. So was Aaron born during the time the midwives were protecting the babies? Or was he born before the new Pharaoh? If he was born before the new Pharaoh, then the slavery could be limited to 80 years. But we don't know that. We don't know how long it was. It could have started prior to the birth of Moses. But it could also be as frequent as three pharaohs. The pharaoh that enacted it, the pharaoh that was going to kill Moses, and the pharaoh he deals with when he goes back. Because when he goes back at 80 years old, God tells him, the ones that were wanting to kill you are now dead. And so it seems like from the birth of Moses until he comes back, he's dealing now with the third pharaoh. Well, was it that first one in that line that was the one that started? And that's just an assumption on the ones that are mentioned for us and the difference in them. There may have been more pharaohs than that. But the children of Israel were in slavery for at least 80 years. May have been longer. But I know sometimes, at least growing up, I always had an impression in my mind they were slaves for 430 years. No, they weren't. If they were slaves for 430 years, they'd have been slaves during the days of Joseph. But they weren't slaves during the days of Joseph. And they weren't slaves until their population grew to the point it became a problem and a concern for the people of Egypt. So Moses was 80 and Aaron 83 when God spoke to them. Moses was 120 years old when he died, and he died overlooking on Mount Nebo the promised land that he would not be allowed to enter. So we come to that bush that's not being burned. And there, God has conversation with Moses. And he tells him, I am because I am. I am that I am. What all is meant by I am? We're going to look at four things. But four things that are tied into this phrase of I am. And we're going to look at them from the standpoint of the God at the burning bush and Jesus himself. And all four things are true of both, because they are the same. This I am. And when Jesus said to the Jews, before Abraham was ever born, I am, they knew what he meant. They knew what he was referring to. And they knew he was declaring to be God. And so they sought to kill him. The first thing I want us to notice, I am that I am, signifies presence. I am that I am. I am always there. Where? David writes a psalm about it. If I go to the depths of the earth, you're there. Your eternal presence is there. If I could go to the far reaches of the universe, beyond anything that any microscope today could see, and beyond anything that any rocket could travel to, you are there. If I go into my mind, you are there. If I go into my heart, you are there. If I go into any place, you are there. I think about that from the standpoint of those that had suffered through the slavery. I was really thinking about it from the standpoint of the slavery being a long time, but it may not have been a long time, but it doesn't matter. The same principle applies. If children of Israel started praying to God as soon as the slavery occurred, God waited 80 years to give them deliverance. I wonder how many thought, you're too late for my loved ones that have already been killed. You're too late for the ones that I cared about who have already died as a result of this suffering. They would be wrong. Because wherever the dead are, there is God. Wherever the dead go, there's God. Whatever occurs, there's God. We simply go to be with him. One of the most comforting things I think of with regard to the dead is they have gone to be with the one who loved them more than I could. They have gone to be with the one who loved them before I ever did. They have gone to be with the one who loved them and knew them more than it would ever be possible for me to know and love them. They've gone to be with him, the one who made them and the one who knows them. I am. What about my dead loved ones? I am. I am the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Jesus said to the Pharisees or to the Sadducees, do you not know that God is not the God of the dead? God is the God of the living. They live to him. How can you say there is no resurrection from the dead? I am. His presence. Part of the fact of his presence. And this is amazing when you think about it. This is the same God that talked to Adam and Eve. This is the same God that told Adam and Eve, you can eat of any tree in the garden, but you can't eat of that tree that's in the middle of the garden. It's the same God. This is the same God who told Noah, I want you to build an ark, I'm destroying the world with flood. This is the same God who gave Abraham a promise and told Abraham what was going to happen to his descendants in the time they would spend in the land of Egypt. It's the same God that spoke to Joseph, the same God that Moses saw at the burning bush, the same God that was on Mount Sinai, the same God that talked to David, the same God that talked to Daniel, the same God that talked to Jeremiah and to all the rest of the prophets, the same God that spoke from heaven and said, "This is my beloved Son in whom I am well pleased," the same God that watches over each and every one of us as we search His Word and as we strive to follow Him, who knows everything that there is to know about us. He has not aged. He has not weakened. He has not changed. He is the same. I am that I am. That is God. And one of the things that explains it to us is God. In Exodus chapter 3, he starts with verse 14 and read through verse 17, and this is what he will say. God said to Moses, "I am who I am. This is what you were to say to the Israelites. I am has sent me to you." God also said to Moses, "Say to the Israelites, the Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob has sent me to you. This is my name forever, the name you shall call me from generation to generation. Go assemble the elders of Israel and say to them, the Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob appeared to me and said, I have watched over you and have seen what has been done to you in Egypt. I know everything that's going on. I know everything that's happened. I know everything that's being done. And I am not unconcerned. I have promised to bring you up out of your misery in Egypt into the land of the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites, a land flowing with milk and honey." He knows everything that's going on in your life right now. He knows everything that's happening to you. Everything that makes you sad. Everything that makes you happy. He's concerned about each and every one of us. Not just the fact of David saying, if I go anywhere in the world, I can't get away from your presence. Such knowledge is too wonderful to me. You add to that, that he knows you as well as he knows me. And he knows you and I both as well as he knew Moses. And as well as he knows ever how many generations are going to come from us that we may never live to see. And he knows every single one of them the same as he knows me and you. And he wants all of us in heaven with him. And he cares for every single one of us. I am that I am. That's this God who is self-existent. Jesus says something about that in the book of John chapter 5. When he's talking to the children of Israel, especially those children of Israel that did not believe in him. And in the book of John chapter 5, as John begins writing about the things that proved to him that Jesus was the Christ, the Son of the living God, among all the other things that he writes about, he says this in John 5:24. Jesus is the one talking. "Very truly I tell you, whoever hears my word and believes him who sent me has eternal life. And I will not be judged, but has crossed over from death to life. Very truly I tell you, a time is coming and has now come when the dead will hear the voice of the Son of God, and those who hear will live. For as the Father has life in himself," he is because he is. He doesn't need water. He doesn't need food. He doesn't need me and you. He doesn't need air to breathe. He's not dependent upon anything outside of himself to have life. "I live because I live. I am because I am. Not because of anything else that he's dependent upon. For as the Father has life in himself, so he has granted to the Son also to have life in himself. And he has given him authority to judge because he is the Son of Man. Do not be amazed at this, For a time is coming when all who are in their graves will hear his voice and come out. Those who have done what is good will rise to live, and those who have done what is evil will rise to be condemned. By myself I can do nothing. I judge only as I hear, and my judgment is just. For I seek not to please myself, but him who sent me. The only question for the dead: what did you do with Jesus? Because every single one of us are going to be raised. Every single person who is dead is going to be raised by the I Am, who knows every single one of us and knows where we are. And he has life in himself. Relationship. I am the God of your father Abraham. I am the God of your father Isaac, your father Jacob. I am also your God. Relationship. Chapter 6, the book of Exodus, verses 6 through 8. Hold on to John. We're going back there. In the book of Exodus, chapter 6, verses 6 through 8. The Bible will tell us this. Therefore say to the Israelites, I am the Lord. I am that I am. That's the phrase. It's going to be the phrase all through this. I am the Lord, and I will bring you out from under the yoke of the Egyptians. I will bring you out from under their yoke. I will free you from being slaves to them, and I will redeem you, bring you back to me. And I will redeem you with an outstretched arm and with mighty acts of judgment. I will take you as my own people, and I will be your God. Then you will know that I am the Lord your God. Not just the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. But I am the Lord your God, who brought you out from under the yoke of the Egyptians. And I will bring you to the land I swore with uplifted hand to give to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. I will give it to you as a possession. I am the Lord. Gave to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. But they never had any land. But their descendants did. And their descendants are given that land because of it. I want you to think about something just real quick. You might want to go to Exodus chapter 8. I'm not going to list everything. But you remember the plagues. Here is God, all-powerful God, coming to the land of Egypt. And he is going to allow Pharaoh to change his mind, and God is going to grant at his request, when he changes his mind, to remove every one of the plagues. And God tells us why he's doing that. I'm doing that so I can show Pharaoh that I am God. I am doing that so that I can show the world's, all the nations of the world, that I am God. And I am doing that so that I can show the children of Israel that I am God. And that's why he does it. The hardening of Pharaoh's heart was nothing more than God taking away the plague at Pharaoh's request. And when the plague was taken away, Pharaoh changes his mind. But I want you to look at this and think about it. The God of all power, the God who can take the breath away from you in a moment. The God who can cause things to happen to all of us where we die instantly. Going to teach Pharaoh a lesson, and look what he does. There's no appearing of God. There's no voice from God that booms from heaven. There is none of that. There are flies. Flies. There are gnats. Gnats. There are frogs. There are all these little things that run around all over the place. And he brings Egypt to its knees and destroys it by bugs, locusts, and by little rocks, you know, that fall out of the sky that are really little ice cubes. Except these weren't little. These were huge. We talk about, I guess, the largest I've ever heard of were softball size. You wonder if these were basketball size. Because they shattered trees when they hit them. And they killed everything that was out when they hit. And by these little things, ice, water, bugs, boils, by all these little things, he destroyed this nation. And he brought this Pharaoh to his knees and proved to him that he was God. Now, if God can do that to the Egyptian empire with these things, what do you think he could do through us to the nation and the world we live in if we would listen to him and trust him and be what he wanted us to be? And it's amazing, the little things he just used that he created. No real power, so to speak. But boy, when the locusts came, they really came. And when all this other stuff happened, it really happened. Relationship. John chapter 14, verses 1 through 7. Jesus talking to his disciples, and through his disciples talking to us. Talking to each and every one of us. In John chapter 14, starting with verse 1. Do not let. Have you ever thought about the start of this verse? Do not let. You mean I have control over that? You mean there's something I can do about that? It's called trust. It's called belief. It's called believing him more than I believe me. Do not let your hearts be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. My Father's house has many rooms. If that were not so, would I have told you that I'm going there to prepare a place for you? And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come back and take you to be with me, that you also may be where I am. You know the way to the place where I am going. Is there anybody in here who thinks this promise is only for the 12 apostles? If you think it's only for the 12 apostles, you don't know what this book means, and you don't know God and what he's saying. Goes further. Thomas said to him, Lord, we don't know where you're going, so how can we know the way? Jesus answered, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one, anybody in the world, no one comes to the Father unless they come through me. If you really know me, you will know my Father as well. From now on, you do know him, and you have seen him. Philip, one of those that was there, said, Lord, show us the Father, and we'll be happy. If I've been with you all this time, and you are saying to me, show us the Father, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. Have you seen Jesus? See him through his word. See him through his actions. See him through what he's done. I am in love with you. I am desiring a relationship with you. I am. His faithfulness. In the book of Exodus chapter 34. Passage that describes his faithfulness. 34th chapter of the book of Exodus. One of those passages that's a little bit difficult to understand, but not if you put the verses together. In Leviticus chapter 34, there are a lot of times people have questions about this verse. And if we just read it, we'll see it. And to get it, I want you to start in 33. And I want you to look at verse 18. Moses is on Mount Sinai. He's already come down and broken the rocks, the tablets of stone. He's about to go back up. Moses, because of the unfaithfulness of Israel, is a very frustrated man and a very angry man. And sometimes that frustration will carry over into, is this really going to work? Then Moses said to God, show me your glory. And the Lord said, okay, I will cause all my goodness to pass in front of you. And I will proclaim my name. I'll tell you who I am. I'll tell you what I'm about. I'll tell you what I'm like. I will proclaim my name, the Lord, that's the I am, in your presence. I will have mercy on whom I will have mercy, and I will have compassion on whom I will have compassion. But, he said, you cannot see my face. For no one may see me and live. Then the Lord said, there's a place near me where you may stand on a rock. When my glory passes by, I will put you in a cleft in the rock, and I will cover you with my hand until I have passed by. Then I will remove my hand, and you will see my back. But my face you will not see. What happens next is that. Next chapter. Then the Lord said to Moses, chisel out two stone tablets like the first ones, and I will write on them the words which were on the first tablets which you broke. Be ready in the morning, and then come up on the Mount Sinai. Present yourself to me there on top of the mountain. Nobody is to come with you or be seen anywhere on the mountain. Not even the flocks and herds may graze in front of the mountain. So Moses chiseled out two stone tablets like the first ones and went up on Mount Sinai early in the morning as the Lord had commanded him, and he carried the two stone tablets in his hands. You notice the difference in the tablets? How were the first ones written? By the finger of God. So the originals are gone. And so we have a copy. And the copy is just as legitimate and just as accurate as the original. Just put that in as kind of a little thing with regard to translations. Then the Lord came down in the cloud, and he stood there with him and proclaimed his name, the Lord. This is when he puts his hand and removes his hand so that Abraham can see what? The literal back of God, who is not flesh but spirit? No. But see what God is like. And what where we miss it is we try to put a fleshly body on God and wonder what God's fleshly body looks like. And Jesus tells us that God is not flesh and bone. He is spirit. He is not flesh and bone. And God is showing him not the entirety of what he is like, but all he needs to know about what God is like. So Moses is about to see God and what he's like. And this is what he says in verse 6. And he passed in front of Moses proclaiming, the Lord, the Lord, the compassionate and gracious God, slow to anger, abounding in love and faithfulness, maintaining love to thousands and forgiving wickedness, rebellion, and sin. Yet he does not leave the guilty unpunished. He punishes the children and their children for the sin of their parents to the third and the fourth generation. This is the God that's with you. The God of compassion, the God of mercy, the God of kindness, the God that forgives. The God that forgives the sins that you commit, the God that forgives the things that you do wrong, the God that forgives when you don't understand, but he will not allow the wicked to go unpunished. But those that are his people who come to him, he will forgive. This is his faithfulness. You know Moses' reaction to seeing God? Moses' reaction to seeing God is in verse 8. Lord, if I found favor in your eyes, then let the Lord go with us. And although this is a stiff-necked people, favor our wickedness and our sin and take us as your inheritance. And God is saying to him, I am making you a covenant. And Moses is saying, if you're not going with us, then we're not going. And Moses is overwhelmed by what God is like. We need to be overwhelmed by what God is like. And we come to know it by reading what he has proclaimed. You notice that? It's through his words that he spoke to Moses, that Moses comes to know him. It's through his words that he's spoken to us that we come to know him. Same thing. The book of 1 John, chapter 1, and verses 5 through 10 in connection with Jesus. First John chapter 1, starting with verse 5. For this very reason, make every effort. I'm sorry. For those of you who were lost like me, we were in 2 Peter. But now we're found. And now we're in 1 John chapter 1, verse 5. This is the message which we have heard from him and declare to you. God proclaimed it. Jesus proclaimed it. This is the message we've heard from him and declare to you, God is light. And in him there is no darkness at all. He's never wrong. You may not understand. You may not like. But he's always light and right and truth. God is light, and in him there is no darkness at all. If we claim to have fellowship with him, and yet we walk in darkness, we lie and do not live out the truth. But if we walk in the light, as he is in the light, we have fellowship with one another, and the blood of Jesus, his son, purifies us from all sin. His faithfulness to forgive us all the things that we have done. Last one, the I am, his covenant will never be broken. His covenant will be kept. He will keep his promises. Exodus chapter 3 and verse 15. We've already read this once. But let's look at it again real quick. Then we'll go to the last verse. Exodus chapter 3 and verse 15. God also said to Moses, say to the Israelites, the Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, who told Abraham you were coming here, who told Abraham you were staying here 430 years, who told Abraham he was going to deliver you out of here and take you to the land that he promised to give to Abraham, and he will give it to you, a land flowing with milk and honey. All those years, all that time, and he never breaks his promise. He takes his time, but in his time, he does everything that he said he was going to do. 2 Timothy chapter 4. How do you get confidence like this? How do you get a heart that will say this? How do you get a heart that believes this to the very depths of its being? Because you have a heart that believes Jesus and knows who Jesus is. I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. I know there's responsibilities for me, and I've done them. I've done what God has asked me to do. Now there is in store for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award to me on that day, and not only to me, but also to all who have longed for his appearing. Because he promised. And he promised to those who live faithful to him. I am that I am. From Genesis to Revelation, all the way down to our day today in 2019. And as far back as you want to go, and as far forward as we can possibly go until Jesus comes again. I am because I am. He'll keep his word. He'll be who he is. He will do what he says. He wants relationship with us. He will never change. There may be some here this evening who are ready to become a Christian. Some who are ready to come back to Christ. We offer you his invitation. As together we stand and as we sing.